everyone, and welcome to Speaking with Carl Thornton Jr. I am your loyal host and producer, and I have a question that I need to ask you right away. When you've done good for someone, did it turn out good for you? Or was it just something you did good for them and it was it? That was it. They got some benefit, you got nothing. Well, we're going to be joined by our guest, yours and mine, Dr. Stephen Post, who has done quite a bit of research on this whole issue of the power of being good, the power of doing good. Good things happen to good people. Giving, matters of this nature that really have opened a lot of eyes and I hope a lot of hearts to the power of being good. And Dr. Post, it is so good to have someone joining us to talk about the power of being good.
Hey, Carl, it is an honor to talk about this subject because it's good for everybody to be good.
That is so amazing. So, Dr. Post, before you share with me your findings, the research, etc., tell me how you decided that you would even look into this matter to begin with.
I think we all understand in our hearts that it's good to be good. You don't have to calculate payback. It's mostly pay it forward. Although in general, people are going to respect you. They're going to want to be around you. You're going to have deeper friendships. You're going to be happier and healthier and on average live a longer life if you think a lot about how you can contribute to the lives of others. So like most young people, the teenager, that was sort of kitchen table wisdom, and I've been fortunate enough not to have to get too far away from it and even be able to study it throughout most of my career in one form or another at various universities and medical schools, Chicago, Michigan, Case Western, Stony Brook, where I am now. And so absolutely, there's a lot of science that shows that there's a generalization from all these different perspectives, emotional and physical, you're better off if you live a generous life.
That is interesting. And you mentioned earlier that that was part of the discussion around the kitchen table when you were younger.
Well, actually, I got very fortunate because when I was about 15, I was in a high school in Concord, New Hampshire. It's called St. Paul's. And I had a wonderful African-American teacher, philosophy, theology, by the name of John W. Walker. He was the only African-American on the faculty, and he went on to become the dean of the National Cathedral. There's actually a park, a John Walker Park in Washington, D.C. He was a Morehouse grad, a close friend of MLK, he taught a lot about how down in Georgia around Morehouse and the Koinonia movement and so forth, this idea that when we live generously and kindly and, if you will, agapically, we are flourishing. And the opposite just doesn't quite work.
Wow.
So you have to run into the right people and try to keep it going. And I've been fortunate. I've been lucky.
So Jesus meant it literally then when he said, it is better, it is more blessed to give than to receive.
You know, you don't have to calculate reciprocal responses because under all conditions, when you engage life through gratitude and giving, those are the two bigs, you're going to feel better internally. You're going to be freed from a lot of stress, from a lot of negative, destructive emotions. You're going to be more creative and more productive. You're going to be happier. And so absolutely, and you know, St. Paul said, God loves a cheerful giver. Now, you know, if someone is really morose and kicking and screaming when they're doing anything for anybody else, then, you know, I worry about that. Although, actually, if you look at it, you know, look at the, I think it was 1990, 92 that they first did the service-based learning in the high schools, about a third of those kids took to it like a duck to water. About two-thirds didn't, but one-half of that second group, the two-thirds, caught on. A light started shining, and they realized, too, that they live a better life with the giver's glow. So some people came around a little slower, but in general, almost everybody now would recognize that you're better off to be in that area of generosity and kindness than you are to be in a world of bitterness and rumination. In fact, for example, white men who ruminate, who are bitter about something in life, have a higher incidence of upper respiratory infection, and that's the American Journal of Public Health, young man.
Interesting. Okay, so we got to talk about that, because as we go through the conversation, I definitely want you to break down for us some of those categories of benefits, you know, how we benefit physically, how we benefit mentally, et cetera. But before we get to those breakdowns, when you talk about giving, what do you have in mind? Is it all about giving money?
There are a lot of different ways to contribute to the lives of other people. It ideally begins in some sense of love, and I don't mean love of designer jeans or love of chocolate, although I'm okay with chocolate and I like jeans and things. But as one very good psychiatrist described it, when the happiness and the security of another is as real to you as your own, then you love that person. And if you think about it, when you're sitting with an old friend, consoling them after a loss over a cup of tea, that kind of works. When you're looking at the crib of a child of your own or a grandchild, that kind of works. When you're just thinking about people who make incredible warm gifts to people through personal caring in the clinical settings, they have that feeling of empathy and compassion and personal touch. You know, that's kind of what we're after in life, and that's why they go into these healing professions to begin with. So that's what love is. When the happiness and security of another is as real to you as your own, you love that person. And you're still in the picture. You know, you're still there. In fact, self-love is really important. The trick is, love other people with a little bit of that same gusto. And you can do it in different ways. Some people, on any given day, in any given moment, they need some compassion because their suffering's really kind of gotten them down. Maybe some people need a little forgiveness because, say, they've made a big mistake, or, you know, I work in a big hospital. They've made a medical error. A couple of years ago, there was a woman who, a very wonderful woman, not in this hospital but elsewhere, who made a little medical mistake, and it resulted in the death of an infant in the neonatal unit, and she couldn't handle it, couldn't forgive herself, and she killed herself. So, you know, people need to be forgiven. They need to be able to forgive themselves. Creativity. Sometimes you can just help someone at work with, a nice idea about, where they could go to kind of solve a problem. So creativity, problem solving, just helping somebody in some little way, might just be helping the neighbor with the groceries. It could be volunteering. It could be a lot of different ways, but helping others, there's just so many different ways that people give. Loyalty, commitment is a way of giving. You know, I like to say it's hard to imagine love without loyalty and a little laughter. So a little mirth and a little loyalty go a long way. In fact, in Why Good Things Happen to Good People, which was a best-selling book, there's a whole chapter on mirth and a chapter on commitment. Not that in the end you're necessarily never going to break commitments, but love doesn't make much sense if you can't give people some loyalty. And so it goes on. There are a lot of different ways to contribute to the lives of others, and we all have our different gifts and strengths, and we're not all the same.
That is so interesting. So, okay, so let's talk about, let's look at for a minute commitment, loyalty. If, and it's good for us to give the things, and I'm thinking especially, not only, but especially in a husband-wife relationship. If it's benefiting to give these things, does it take away from the person to not be loyal, to not be committed?
Well, you know, I'm an imperfectionist, Carl. I'm sorry to tell you that. Which is to say, I've been married for 35 years. Just kidding.
Wow. Congratulations.
Yeah. And that means that you're not looking for perfection in other people because you're not going to find it in them. And you know what? They are not going to find it in you.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to have any kind of a lasting creative relationship where you really grow over time, you kind of have to live with people's imperfections. There's no Mr. Perfect. There's no Ms. Perfect. And that's the whole point of what I call the spirituality of imperfection. You know, we all fall short. None of us are all that glorious. We all have our down days, and we do stupid things. We make poor choices. We behave badly at times. So, you know, within limits, I mean, I guess there are certain points where you have to think seriously about breaking commitments. But in general, you know, I've lived my life taking seriously my commitments to my wife, to my two kids. I actually have a daughter who's about 35 now, and a son who's 23. Same marriage, just a long time between kids.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, we all need to be loyal to one another, to our colleagues at work, because, you know, life doesn't go very far if you don't have trust. You can't have a workplace without trust, unless people have a sense that you're loyal, that you're not going to go saying things about them or breaking confidentiality, breaking trust. You know, you got to have that kind of commitment to the people around you. It's sort of the glue that binds people together. And once you start breaking commitments left and right, in the end, there's not going to be much left for you when you think, well, the next person who comes along, they're going to be better, and I'm going to really be successful with them. Well, maybe, but in fact, if you look at the statistics, you know, people who remarry, for example, I mean, sometimes they're very happy and they remarry for good reasons, don't get me wrong, but the likelihood of that relationship lasting better than the earlier one is actually in the negative column.
Wow.
Yeah. So you have to figure that if you're gonna live life well, you know, you want to have certain kinds of loyalties, and we express that in many, many different ways. Loyalty to our parents when they get old, and maybe they have Alzheimer's disease, and that's really tough to be an adult caregiver. That's a big deal for anybody. I mean, you need a lot of help. You need your local Alzheimer's Association.
Yes, sir.
You know, and it's not simple. And if your kid suddenly you know, is 15 or 16 years old and is getting into trouble and maybe spending time with the wrong kinds of people and who knows, drinking and drugging and so forth, then you've got a real problem. And a lot of people feel that, and it breaks their hearts, but. You know, you have to be loyal. You have to do the best you can. You have to be patient. You have to be humble. You have to be an attentive listener. Listening is a really important form of love, by the way. And I have a chapter on attentive listening in the book. And, you know, a lot of times there's not too much you can do, but if you just listen and you're present and you're there and you have a good vibe, that's all you need to do.
That is awesome. Our guest, ladies and gentlemen, is Dr. Stephen Post. Dr. Post, when we come back, could you tell us more about your background, a little bit more about the book, and then start giving us some more of those details on some of these benefits of doing good, being good, giving?
Yes, sir.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, stay with us. Dr. Post, shedding light on love, goodness, and giving. right here on Speaking with Carl Thornton Jr. Forward thinking. That's been part of the program, Speaking with Carl Thornton.